Hello, this is Theatre Voice. I'm Dominic Cavendish. With me are David Benedict, Mark Shenton, Carol Wardis and Matt Wolfe. Pinocchio in Reverse is how director Howard Davis described Edmond Rostand's 1897 heroic comedy Cyrano de Bergerac in one newspaper interview prior to his current revival at the National Theatre. By that, he didn't mean that the legendarily ginormous hooter of the play's hero shrinks during the course of the evening, but that whereas Pinocchio's schnozzle grows the more he lies, Cyrano's nose is an index of his truth-telling. "Mine is a moral elegance of the mind," says Cyrano in Act One of this production. "I face the world with an unclouded stare, my honour glittering and my conscience clear. My independence shines out with panache, my spirit bristles like a stiff moustache. Covered with glory, bright with reputation, I have no need to be a slave of fashion." All very noble, of course, but in the context of the story, such integrity becomes rather problematic. Cyrano pours his abundant creative energies as a poet into wooing Roxanne, the woman he loves with unrequited passion, on behalf of another man, the doltish but handsome Christian. Even when Christian dies, Cyrano finds himself unable to tell the truth, that it is his lyrical outpourings that Roxanne has fallen in love with. So we have the makings of a tragedy, or at the very least, a sick joke. Cyrano, so to speak, has cut off his nose to spite his face. For all the swashbuckling surface exuberance, peer into the core of Rostand's classic and you have an array of complex questions about love, identity, creativity and suffering, and the makings in Cyrano of a right old misanthropic misery guts. Who better, you might think, to accentuate the thorny rather than the flowery nature of the play and help strip it to its essentials than that most hangdog of Northern Irish actors, Stephen Ray. Armed with a new translation by fellow Belfaster, the poet Derek Mahon, and navigating a stage dominated by a forbidding mass of steel scaffolding, upon Ray's stooped shoulders rests the chief responsibility for making Howard Davies' poor theatre staging a satisfyingly rich experience. Matt Wolfe, do you think that Stephen Ray carries off this task with panache, or do you think he made a hash?
I can't come up with a rhyme to match that. It was wonderful to see Stephen Ray back on stage. I'm not sure he's a natural Cyrano. There's something sort of hangdog, as you say, and rather basset hound-like about him, which is infinitely appealing and charming, but you always feel with Cyrano that he's fundamentally extrovert. He's a bit of a showman, and I felt that that was the element of Cyrano that was found wanting here, the sort of Cyrano of posturing of the public arena who, you know, has a flamboyance and a kind of style to him that I don't think Stephen Ray particularly comes by naturally, lovely though it is to have him back at the National with Howard Davis in the Olivier, where they worked so profitably on the Chocron all those years ago.
Lack of flamboyance. David Benedict, Anthony Scher, who I think must have given one of the most flamboyant performances of Cyrano in modern memory, apparently his nose melted during the RSC production at some point. Stephen Ray didn't lose his nose on the press night, but do you think he came unstuck in this production?
I do think, rather like Matt, that it's basically a piece of miscasting. There's a lugubrious quality to him. He has this hangdog, as everybody keeps saying, expression. When you see him in something like the Neil Jordan movie, The End of the Affair, it's sort of Mr. Gloom is in the room. He is fantastic at holding on to that kind of depressed sadness. And actually, you need levity, you need lightness of touch, you need someone that doesn't keep dropping down at the end of every phrase. I felt as if a lot of his vocal inflections always ended up coming down at the end of the sentences. And that actually is a big problem if you've got a stripped down production like this. Cyrano absolutely relies on its leading man at the best of times, but certainly in this production where you've got William Dudley's scaffolding set in the vast expanse of the Olivier, you need an actor to really animate this. And actually, I didn't really buy the swashbuckling that Ray gave us.
So, I mean, it's a very flamboyant role. It's associated with excessively flamboyant actors. Mark Shenton, do you not think there is a case to be made, though, for this play being given a different interpretation through its leading player?
Well, there is, but I felt he was completely dwarfed, first of all, by the hideous set, and secondly, by the crude, clunking translation, which was full of anachronisms. I mean, his at one point he talks about how he wouldn't dispense with his nose. I'd rather lose my dick besides the woman like it when I lick. I mean, that put my own nose seriously out of joint.
Do we have any candidates at all in favour of this production? Carol Wardis, what did you think?
Well, when I wrote my review for my paper, I find that I gave it 3 stars and that actually I enjoyed it when I saw it. It was actually in retrospect that I began to enjoy it less. What I enjoyed about it, I enjoyed the kind of irony, a kind of dry irony that Stephen Ray brings to the performance. I also enjoyed the fact that it was like a kind of Celtic. I loved all the kind of the Scottish accents, the Northern Irish accents, the Dublin accents. I loved all of that. I thought it gave a very different feel, and it was actually great to see so many different accents on the stage and to feel that there was a kind of ironic touch to this. So I enjoyed that hugely. But what I couldn't quite work out from that was that it was like a mixture of Riverdance meets Les Mis, because there was so much music going on and so much dancing, and I felt that was somehow at odds with this very kind of dry, ironic tone.
You've latched onto something there which in a sense perhaps creates an area of contradiction, that you have a very understated leading player and a rather overblown at times production. Maybe that is an essential problem that Howard Davis is wrestling with in trying to translate this play into a huge space like the Olivier. Couldn't somebody argue that in fact it's not Stephen Ray's performance that is letting the production down? Far from it, that is actually rather an accomplished and a well-achieved performance, but it is really the surroundings, the trappings. David, do you think the fault lies at Stephen Ray's door?
No, I think there's a very, very large and wide problem here. It's not so much that I didn't particularly enjoy Howard Davis's production, which I'm afraid I didn't. I mean, when Howard Davis is good, he's really, really good. Morning Becomes Electra, Iceman Cometh, Private Lives, fantastic work. But also, when he gets it wrong, he does tend to get it very spectacularly wrong, like The Tower at the Almeida and The Italian Girl in Algiers at the ENO, both productions that most people have happily forgotten. Howard Davis is left with a big problem here, because he's got a production in the Olivier, one of the largest stages in the country. It's a huge vast expanse. It takes a long time to physically get from the wings onto the centre of the stage. It's very, very big. You have to give it a lot of action. And he's got a design budget of £65,000. He's got a cast of 32, all of whom have got about 4 costumes. I mean, do the maths, there's not a lot of money. And so he's filled it with action. He's got Christopher Bruce doing dance work. He's got all this kind of stuff going on in a desperate attempt to animate this text. And, as we say, the lugubrious Stephen Ray in the middle of it. And actually, I don't think he can make it add up.
Do you think that maybe it's a sense of the director lacking the courage of his convictions, that he wanted to do a sort of poor theatre reading of this play, something really quite elemental? He got a bit scared and thought, well, maybe we need to sort of put in a little bit of fencing interlude and this kind of thing, all these things that pad out the action. Mark, do you think that's the problem, really?
Yeah, lots of business. I mean, Stephen Ray has to do his big wooing scene, walking up one ramp and then down it, and then up the other ramp and down it. There's 2 ramps on either side of the stalls, which incidentally cut off the view to some of those people seated there, but he has to keep traversing. It's just so much business. It would have been far simpler if he was just doing it from centre stage.
Well, to some extent, you couldn't help but feel that it was sort of a Cottesloe production that had been displaced at the Olivier, and that in a way, if they'd put it in the Cottesloe or in just a smaller arena, it wouldn't have to take all these trappings, which at the same time the production seems to want to divest itself of. So it's oddly schizophrenic. I mean, isn't it a big production? It doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind.
I think you could say many good things about this particular production, but one of the saddest things is that what Stephen Ray can't do, or what Howard Davis hasn't been able to get from Stephen Ray, is the ending. And that ending, okay, you're not going to be in floods of tears, but there is a kind of yearning. Why on earth Cyrano is making this self-sacrifice, why he keeps his love so quiet for all of his life and until the moment of kind of death, is a kind of enigma. But even so, I just felt that he failed spectacularly at the end. I felt so unmoved. You know, it was a huge disappointment.
I think one problem, though, this production throws up is a question having to do with the play, which is that if you're going to strip bare a play and reveal the text for what it truly is, you have to be careful what play you're doing that with. And I think you know, the received wisdom about Cyrano is that it's not necessarily a great play as a piece of writing. It's a wonderful piece of sentiment, and it's a wonderful excuse for extraordinary and often extravagant theater. But I'm not quite sure that there's much of a virtue to be had in stripping Cyrano of all plays bare. I'm not quite sure what the play then gives you.
I also think that there is a drawing on from that, if you're going to strip it down to its component parts almost, you really do have to be careful which translation you're using, and I think that there are big problems with the Derek Mahn text. Now, it may be my sense of humour, but I didn't find it particularly funny. Others may have, but what happens in that translation, Mark's already talked about the anachronisms, which are obviously very conscious. It's there for gags to bring up contemporary remarks within a period text. But what that does is it keeps drawing attention to itself. You keep being terribly aware, oh, there's a modern joke, oh, this is what's happening. You keep being removed from the action, which means you don't get engaged. If in the middle of the wooing scene, where your heart is supposed to be being broken, actually you're sitting back going, oh, that was a really rather clever gag, then you're not actually going to be in there with the characters, which is a big problem.
Well, I disagree. I don't know whether everyone around the table agrees with David's line, but my feeling was that actually it does a rather interesting job. It keeps you on your toes. You're never going to relax into anything too lush and flowery and poetic, but at the same time it's capable of great lyricism. I thought there was a fantastic moment which I thought justified Mann's involvement, which was showing in a way how a poet thinks about writing poetry. And I'll quote it as much as I can in full, which was, "We carry in our pockets at all times our odd thoughts, phrases and images, lists of rhymes, forever blowing bubbles in the air. We dream up ideal women everywhere." Kind of casual, doggerel in a way, but beautifully tuned into the romance of writing poetry and writing lyric love poetry. Did you not think that for all the anachronistic follies was worth it?
Yeah, but that's a beautiful passage, the one you've cited, and there were others, but I'm afraid I kept feeling almost as if Derek Mahn was slightly embarrassed by the play and had to keep undercutting his own best impulses, which you've just cited with other stuff which actually didn't help. It was as if the whole production, in a sense, was slightly embarrassed by what the play is.
And the staging doesn't provide much sense of time or place either because of that clunky set.
Hmm. But the argument of the anachronisms is that this is a play that really speaks to the here and now, doesn't it? That we are just as capable of sort of toadying up to the corporate, you know, cheeses. We're just as capable of all that sort of phoniness and flattery which Cyrano sees through. You know, why not create some paralleling through the language, at least, if you're not going to update it in modern dress?
Well, I would say that's pandering to the absolute worst of contemporary thought about, oh, well, no one will get anything unless it's current. I think if you give somebody excellence, if you give them a production of Cyrano de Bergerac in which your heart gets broken, in which you understand everything that goes on with the fawning and the flattering and this, that and the other, then you'll see that it's relevant and you'll see that it's contemporary and you'll see that it's modern. You don't actually have to put in the cheap gags in order to alert everybody to this.
We should have perhaps even kept with a more sort of traditional staging and even an old translation, something just kind of run-of-the-mill, do you think? I mean, is that really what you want at the National, something that's not going to take a risk?
No, I don't think we're saying that, are we? I think the only overriding problem with this is a certain crudity, perhaps.
Do you think that crudity can be traced back to the amount of money that has or hasn't been spent on this production? Is this a kind of aberration, in a way, for the National, or do you think it's systematic in the way that they're now approaching these big main house productions?
Well, it's very interesting, because when Nicholas Heitner had his very first press conference over a year ago and was talking about the £10 season, he said at that, we will incidentally not just be doing these pared-down productions in the Olivier, we will be doing productions capable of great scope and size, like His Dark Materials and Cyrano. And he mentioned Cyrano in the same sentence then as His Dark Materials, as a sort of, you know, all stops out National Theatre venture. A year later, he's shifted gear, well, entirely because of Howard Davis and the origins of this, but I'm not sure this is the kind of play best suited to the £10 aesthetic, I hate to say.
I mean, I don't think we should attack the National Theatre for having sort of failed dramatically or something. They've had a fantastic first year, and this production doesn't quite fire on all cylinders. I don't think that there are that many lessons to be drawn. I don't think we can go, aha, this proves that you must spend more money in the Olivier, or you must do an old production, or you must do a different translation. This, sometimes you put all the best ingredients in to make a beautiful meal, and it just doesn't quite work?
Among the ingredients that we haven't yet cited, I think we should talk about a few of the supporting performances, not least Claire Price as Roxanne and Zubin Vala as Christian. In a way, of course, some of them have very difficult parts, and I think Christian is almost a goldfish part, isn't it? At times he just literally has to stand there opening and closing his mouth, unable to come up with the right words.
And supposed to look pretty, which he doesn't. You describe him as doltish and handsome, and unfortunately, Zubin Vala is many things, but not that.
He might be a good Cyrano, actually,
exactly.
Someday.
Yes.
You could see him as Cyrano.
I felt that Zubin Vala and Malcolm Story, one of my favourite actors, who was playing De Guiche, I thought, what a terrible waste of opportunities. I mean, what wonderful actors, and they looked in this production like dolt heads.
Do you think this is worth seeing, this production, even if it has flaws?
I would have thought that anybody seeing the play for the first time will have a very good evening, actually. I mean, as I said right at the very beginning, I enjoyed it at the time. It was only in retrospect, when I started to pull the pieces apart, that I felt that I hadn't enjoyed it quite as much. But I think it's a very enjoyable evening.
And Mark, as a champion of the £10 season?
Well, I think the production is a misstep, but it does only cost you £10. It's not a big risk to take. It's worth seeing anyway.
I sort of agree with Mark. The point is that at £10, it's like going to a movie. And if you went to see a movie and you thought it wasn't much chop afterwards, you wouldn't sit there and rent your clothes asunder. You go, oh, well, it wasn't that great. And actually, maybe Cyrano ain't that great, but there are good things in it, and it's an interesting play to see.
It's a lot better than Tales from the Vienna Woods, I'll say that. And it's an intriguing misfire. So if you know, that seems appropriate for £10, then why not? It is, you know.
Well, on balance, the no's have it, but the idea, I think, would be that we should at least part with £10 and have a look. So thank you very much, Matt Wolfe, Mark Shenton, David Benedict, and Cara Wardis.